At the end of February 2026, the United States launched its first attacks on Iran, killing its supreme leader at the time, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Since then, other Gulf countries have been roped into the conflict. Global markets have fluctuated, key oil production facilities and passages have been affected, and dozens have been killed in the crossfire. I'm Haya Panjwani. On this episode of The Story Behind the AP Story, we hear from the reporters on the ground covering the Iran war. The conflict is ongoing and rapidly developing, so some circumstances may have changed.
Hi, my name is Joe Fetterman. I am the AP's news director here in Jerusalem. I have been based in the city for over 20 years and been through a number of wars.
My name is Bassem Amroui. I'm an Associated Press reporter based in Beirut. I'm currently in the Iranian capital of Tehran.
The country is affected in many ways. You can probably see the streets are quite quiet. Many things have come to a standstill. Schools have been closed for over a month. Many people are either not working or working from homes. There's a lot less traffic on the streets, and public gatherings have been banned.
Since we arrived in early April, there have been almost daily airstrikes on the capital as well as other parts of the country, while Iran had been firing rockets and missiles into Persian Gulf nations as well as into Israel. The airstrikes by the United States and Israel happen almost every day until the ceasefire went into effect. And we could hear the thuds, we could hear planes flying at low altitude over the city.
This one, of course, does feel different in many ways. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been building up Iran, or has mentioned, looked at Iran as the number one existential threat to Israel for years, for decades. And we have been building up toward this war for a long time, for many years, and now it is finally upon us. Now, because Israel's been dealing with these threats for so long, there are many shelters, either public shelters nearby here in our building, in our bureau here in Jerusalem. We run downstairs to the basement and there is a public shelter for the building. So for example, my apartment, I have something like that. I can run in even if it's the alarm's at 3 a.m. We can run inside and huddle in there for a few minutes, but not everybody is lucky enough to have those in their homes. So many people have to run outdoors to public shelters. We have seen scenes of people even moving into shelters in Tel Aviv. You see people sleeping in tents and sleeping bags inside some of these shelters, and there's almost this whole underground lifestyle that has come around in Tel Aviv.
And John Gambrell is based in the United Arab Emirates.
I'm in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, and this is where I typically work out of as the news director for the Gulf and Iran for the Associated Press. And this war has really changed a lot. And one thing that really stands out is the fact that Dubai has always been viewed as sort of a safe corner of the Middle East through the US invasion of Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. It was viewed as a safe haven, a tax-free environment for people from all over the world to take advantage of and to live and make money and also help these state-backed industries in the UAE. Now, since the war began, we have seen a flux of people go out of the country. Some people have remained. The streets are a lot emptier than normal. Schools have basically closed up. We've had all the students go to distance learning. They're at home. Now, it remains unclear sort of for the wider UAE what the future holds, because just in the last little bit, we've seen more and more attacks by the Iranians target oil infrastructure, petrochemical plants, even businesses. Right here in Media City, where I am, about 500 meters away, there was either an Iranian drone strike or an interception or something that damaged the headquarters of Oracle, that American tech company, and it blew a hole through part of the building.
Iran fought a war against the United States and Israel for 12 days in June last year. And the war that started on February 28th is the second war within less than a year. We see that the streets are not as full as usually they are. You could cut through the city without passing through road jams. We didn't see panic within the population. We didn't see any rush to the market. So people are used to war. They fought a war against Iraq for 8 years, from 1980 to 1988. And then again, as I said before, the 12-day war before and the current war. So people are not panicking.
We have been at war really since October 7th, 23, 2.5 years of war. Now, there was a ceasefire that's in mostly in Gaza as well as Lebanon, but things had slowed down since a ceasefire was reached between Israel and Hamas back in October. So there had been kind of low-grade fighting, and we were under the impression that the worst was behind us. Then sirens went off on that Saturday morning, February 28th, and we felt that like we were back in the fall of 23. Here we are back in a full-fledged war. Now the feeling in the country at the beginning, there was a lot of support for this war. People have felt threatened by Iran. Remember all of these conflicts, whether it's Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, everything goes back to Iran. Iran is the one that funded and armed these groups. The first day of war, Israelis tend to line up behind the government. There's a lot of adrenaline and there's a lot of patriotism, I think, at play. But the longer these wars drag on, the more divided the country becomes, the more fatigued people become, and they start to ask questions. Now, the polls still show some solid support for this war. People do think the war is justified. They do think that Iran is a serious threat, but you do see that support is softening in some of these polls, and the longer this goes on, the more likely it is that those numbers will continue to drop.
So since the war's begun, there have been a series of escalating moments, and one of the most important has been the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians have continued to basically attack ships, tankers, other vessels in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, and in the Strait itself. That strait is the narrow mouth of the Persian Gulf, through in peacetime about 20% of all oil and natural gas traded passes. Now it's also really important for urea and fertilizer and other things that really make the global economy tick, make crops grow, and make sure that cargo gets from China to other places in the world. So that's just been shut off.
On Friday, April 17th, U.S. President Donald Trump and Iran's foreign minister said that the Strait of Hormuz is now fully open to commercial vessels.
The United States and Israel have been demanding that Iran does not enrich uranium at all and that it gets rid of its stockpiles of enriched uranium. Iran is insisting on enriching uranium to low levels, and Iran has hinted in previous negotiations that came before the war that it's ready to give the enriched uranium it has, the stockpiles, to a third country, most likely Russia. The war that started on February 28 did not only affect the region, it affected the whole world economy. The war started with attacks by the United States and Israel on Iran. Iran retaliated by closing the Strait of Hormuz, which is the narrow passage on the tip of the Persian Gulf. Before the war started, nearly 20% of the world's oil supply used to pass through this passage. And the passage had been closed since then. Now it's supposed to open anytime because of the two-week truce.
The longer this war goes on, the worse things get, not only for Israel, but for the entire region. Those trends that I talked about with the fatigue, the people questioning, how long can this go on? How much can the army keep on fighting after 2.5 years of this? Political leaders, military leaders have said that the army already is stretched thin. Do they have enough air defenses to keep shooting down all of these missiles? So there are lots of questions, and there will be more and more questions and more of a debate here inside of Israel. And if the fighting continues, it has rippled already across the region. We have seen Iran turn its missiles not only at Israel, but also at U.S. allies, at the UAE, at Qatar, other countries, Bahrain, in the region. And the more the fighting goes on, the worse it gets.
Overall, economically, this has had a major impact on the global economy. Oil, natural gas infrastructure has been attacked, and shipments that are needed to basically, put gasoline in pumps in Asia or get jet fuel into aircraft. Those supply lines are starting to be affected. We're starting to see some countries begin to hoard, begin to ask people not to buy so much gasoline or diesel fuel. And we've seen prices really shoot up. And those higher fuel prices will have a knock-on effect for consumer prices, because every good that's in a store has to get there somehow, whether that's flown on an airplane or driven by a truck powered by a diesel engine. So this will have a knock-on effect for people. And in the United States particularly, gasoline prices have long been associated with political turmoil. The Trump administration knows this. It keeps trying to say that it's working to keep the gasoline prices down by pumping oil in America. American oil production is up, but the global market still determines sort of the overall price, so that still has a major impact. And even if the war stopped right now, you would still need to rebuild all of this broken and damaged natural gas infrastructure, especially in Qatar, as well as oil facilities, refineries, petrochemical plants. All these things would have a long tail of needing to get repaired and then get back into service. So these economic disruptions could last for a long time.
Any war that happens in this part of the world affects the whole world. There are huge oil reserves in this region, and as it's known, Iran retaliated not only by closing the Strait of Hormuz. Iran fired rockets and missiles and drones into oil-rich countries such as the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar. So it's a very, very dangerous conflict. And God forbids, if the war breaks out again and the ceasefire collapses, we're going to feel it more and more, and inflation is expected to rise. So the repercussions are massive to the whole international community, to the whole world, not only to the region.
The last thing is, what I've learned in over two decades here is you should always take a look at the Israeli domestic sphere as well. What does this all mean for Netanyahu? Now, if things had worked out the way that he wanted, this most likely this would have been a very quick, decisive victory for Israel. That would have cleared the way for him to declare victory over Iran and hold a new election where he might be positioned to win another term in office. His ratings have gone down since those October 7th attacks. A decisive victory over Iran would clear the way or improve the chances of Netanyahu winning another term in office. But again, that hasn't happened so far. He's running out of time because his term currently ends in October. Now, he has the option of declaring early elections, but he would only do so if he feels that he has a chance of victory. So if there's a decisive victory, if there's a quick victory over Iran, that improves the chances of an early election and another term for Netanyahu. But the longer this drags on, those odds go down for him, and then he is forced to go into an election when not only are the memories or the images of this recent war still fresh in people's heads, but it will also be close to the anniversary of that October 7th disaster, so that could also work against Netanyahu.
This has been the story behind the AP story. For more on our coverage of the Iran war, visit apnews.com. For more episodes of this show, visit our website, AP News' YouTube channel, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.